Hey everyone, welcome back to another exciting episode of the Iconist Podcast. I am one of your hosts tonight, today, this morning, whenever you listen to the show. My name is Barry 3D for Deep, Dark, and Delicious. Hey! And the joke never gets old. And on my side, as always, the man, the myth, the legend, the one that's got you dancing all night long, especially night on the long weekends, right? Hope you enjoy. Yeah. My cousin, the one and only,
DJ Rod C. Welcome in to everyone. We have something for you. Yo, we got something for you. I'm just so excited. I don't know how to start off by saying, do you see the center number? Does that look very interesting? We'll leave it at that. Who we're talking about? We'll leave it at that. Shh. We'll get back to that.
We'll get back to that. Okay, I'm trying to keep my heart rate low. There's reasons I show some behind the scenes stuff. All right, here we go. So first and foremost, this is episode 150. We've hit 150 episodes of the Iconist Podcast. We are very proud to say that we've hit episode 150. We always like to celebrate these little milestones, like episode 25, 50, 100, 150. Thank you for being here. And for you who are new, go back, check out our backlog. For those who have been with us all 150 episodes, Sean, gotta shout you out. Thank you very much from day one and rocking with us from day one and everyone that supports us. So let's get through some of that and then we'll get right down to it. So first, as we always say, manners maketh the man. And we always got to pass on the love to the ones that, you know, shows the love to the show. So that's you, first and foremost, everyone that clicks, likes, subscribes, and shares these episodes. Anyone that downloads the episodes from our Podbean site or anywhere you get your podcast from, you know, anyone that subscribes on our YouTube channel, thank you very much and watches this. Thank you and communicates in the comments. We read them all. Okay. First and foremost, got to support it. Got to support it. So with the books, we wouldn't have the show. So here we go. If you want to go out and get yourself a comic book collection, please, you got to check out a couple of places. First and foremost, if for our friends out in Kitchener, please check out Wow Comics. Tell Wes and the guys we said hi. For those out in Cambridge, go and check out A Hero's Tale and tell Andrew and the rest of the guys we said hi. You know, and last but not least, check out X Wings in Montreal. Tell Trevor and the rest of the guys we said hi. If you're any of you watching this right now, you see me wearing this shirt, my Gatchaman shirt. Extra special shout out to Trevor, who understands that I'm a huge Gatchaman, Battle of the Planets fan. And he was able to get this shirt, you know, for me, you know, not for me, but the person that ordered it didn't take it. Guess what? I swooped it up. Beauty. Beauty. And it's an official shirt. It's not a knockoff because you can see here in the little white writing here, it's a Sandy Frank. Okay, right on. Thank you. Thank you, Trevor. Now, on top of that, we got to do a shout out to the rest of, you know, the comedy troupe, because I do comedy. So if you want to find out where I'm going to be or any news about this show, please go and check out Barry3D.com. That is my website. Links to everything I do, including this show. And if you want to see who else I do comedy with, that's one of our guests we just had on just recently. So that's Dave Sokolowski, Zoe Fowley, and myself. We are A Touch of Grey Matter, rocking a stage, and, you know, for charity and for fun near you. Okay. Rod, before we go any deeper, where can we find you?
Well, you can find me everywhere possible. You can find me on Instagram at Mr. Rod C, M-R-R-O-D-C. You can find me in the world of twitch.tv/DJ Rod C. You can find me in the world of TikTok at DJ Rod C 1. That's DJ Rod C 1. Number one.
Number one. We are also a part of the Subculture Podcast Network. So that network makes up ourselves, the Iconist Podcast, along with Rebel Rock Radio, Dork Wars, the podcast, Portable Hole, the podcast, Entertainment Rants podcast, and of course, Trekker's Delight. So I just say, you know, like, Trekker's Delight. Okay, there we go. Not Rapper's Delight, different whole thing altogether. Along with us, we're the Subculture Podcast Network. You know, check out our show. Check out the shows we also affiliated with, and that would be great. We got some stuff that are coming with all of us. We kind of crisscrossing each other's shows, and that's in the works, people. It's in the works. Sometimes it just takes a little bit longer because this is a grassroots operation. Everything is done by us. You know, we're almost like FUBU. For us, by us. Nice. And what I mean by that, I mean by podcasters and everything out there and everyone out there, right? We don't discriminate. There we go. It's all much love. Now, as I said before, we're also on Podbean. So if you want to check it out and you too want to have your own podcast, check out podbean.com. You'll see our show, which is the iconist.podbean.com. And you'll find our page with all past episodes you can download, share, and listen at your own leisure. And once again, please comment. We will definitely get back to you on top of that. And with that last part there, if you need any kind of work done, regardless of where you are in the world, and you need a graphic designer, be it for a digital media or a physical media, doesn't matter what it is, from posters to cards to logos, anything for any event, as I said, podcast or wrestling, there's only one man and one man you should reach out to, and that man is
J Bird Digital Art.
Mr. Jason Reese, J Bird Digital Arts. Please, you tell him you heard about him on the Iconist podcast, and he will give you discount off the work. Also, we got to say, you know, we were recording today. So today that we're recording is March 24th. But, you know, this episode is coming out later than that. But we got to say, happy birthday, Mr. Jason Reese, for behalf of myself.
Yes. And me. Happy birthday, sir.
Happy Woo-hoo. Birthday for all you do and everything you do for us, man. So when you want to come here, this Jay, we know we've already wished you happy birthday on your Facebook page. And if anyone wants to reach out to Jason or Jay Bird Digital Arts, you reach out to him on his Facebook page. That's the best way to reach out to him. Wish him a happy birthday. Tell me heard about it on the Iconist podcast. And, you know, start your projects too. It doesn't have to be anything. And he's really great, professional, awesome. We love him. All right. Wish you a great one, brother. Another year around the sun. Hey, Jinx and Mischief with a lot of laughs. There we go.
You okay?
I'm good.
All right. Okay.
I'm good. All right. So we will kick off this episode.
Right.
Surprisingly enough, it took us 150 episodes to finally get to this episode. Rod, on the Iconist podcast, who's the icon today, Rod?
The icon is Gotcha Man.
Good Lord, it's Gotcha Man. I've been trying to keep myself together for this whole episode for the longest time now. A lot of people are always saying, hey, Barry, you talk about Gotcha Man. If you look here behind me, some of you might see it, might not. You see this big poster behind me. You've probably seen it in other of our YouTube videos. And if you watched it on YouTube, you see this poster. It always hangs on my side, no matter where it is. This thing is about, like, you know, 2 feet, 3 feet big, or whatever case it be. This is a Gotcha Man of Eagle Leader Ken. Right? You know, okay. Eagle Leader Ken from Gotcha Man. All right, that's who it is. I'm wearing the Gotcha Man emblem shirt because that's who it is. We were talking about Gotcha Man. We're talking about Battle of the Planets. We're not talking about G-Force Guardians of the Galaxy, even though, you know, no. That was too watered down. And this is This is my absolute favorite anime IP of all time. Bar none. So number one. I know we didn't cover it on episode one. We didn't cover it on episode 25, 50, 75, 100.
We're going to give it time. You know, like good wine. Just let it sit. It savors. It gets better over time. It's time to bring that bottle out right now. That's what we're doing. Let's go.
Right. There's a couple of things I know, Rod, it surprised you. We it took me a long time to get to Micronauts. It took me a long time to get to Guyver. It took me even longer to get to Gotcha Man / Battle of the Planets. Ooh, it's getting hot in here. Okay. I'm trying not to sweat because I'm trying to keep this shirt pristine. Like I said, I've never worn this shirt before. I've owned this shirt for over 2.5 years. Picked it up from Chex Wings. And I've never worn it. I wanted to keep it pristine. Now, here we are. First time this shirt has actually come out of the packaging. Glad that COVID hasn't made me gain too much weight that I would need an extra large and make it tight. The shirt is good. I'm wearing another shirt underneath this because I don't want to sweat through it.
This shirt Keep the heart rate down. Heart rate down, no sweat. Heart rate down, no sweat. We can do it.
We can do it, Rod. I'm going to try my best.
That's all we can do.
Okay, so first of all, let me show you what. We'll get into the facts of this, but as a young lad, I was into my science fiction stuff. God bless my dad. I'm not talking. He's not passed. He's still around, right? My dad, come on. Uncle's still good.
What? I miss
right, right. I'm just saying, I got to call him out. You know, sometimes got to give people their flowers and call them out in a good way. All right. I got to give my dad my flowers, right? People say, hey, man, what does your dad do? My dad came over now. And keep in mind, he's from Barbados. He's come over. My mom's come over. They have me. All right. There we go. And here we are living in Montreal. And while there, I'm a huge sci-fi person, henceforth, why we do this podcast and show. Mm-hmm. That, with that, my dad has come from, you know, action movies. My dad's more about cowboy movies, western movies, action movies. That's what he grew up with. He right. wasn't big into sci-fi. He was not big into sci-fi back in Vim, back in Barbados. No, he come over here and all of a sudden he have me. And the first thing I see is Action Man, Star Wars, Godzilla, Speed Racer. Oh man, I'm Looney Tunes. Yeah, that's what I came up with. Okay. That's what that we didn't have back then, right? Because there was no data machines in your house. There was no VCRs in your house, no VHS. There was no streaming services, right? Those didn't exist back then. You had your one TV, was this not even a flat screen. It was this big box TV that takes about four guys to come and lift into your place. Yeah. That thing was solid oak with a tube screen TV, okay? You've seen, if you watch WandaVision, you've seen the old school TVs. It took a lot of people to move that box TV into place with the dial, the switch channels, okay? It wasn't even no remote control, press a button. You had to pick switch channels. And this is how we grew up. And there was no after-school cartoons. If you got an after-school cartoon special, you was lucky. I'm going to tell you right now, was all about Saturday morning cartoons. From Saturday morning, starting like at 7 o'clock,
100%.
Like noon, that's when you would catch all your cartoons. It would be on CBS and NBC and ABC. There was no Fox. There was no Amazon. There was no Prime. There was no Netflix. There was no Crunchyroll or whatever case to be. There was no YouTube. There was none of that. None. It was press being a nerd back in the day. So now we're sitting there, and of course, my dad had to put up with me and understand him and my mom, but not even just like I said, more my dad, and you'll see why. So him and my mom both come over, have me turn around. I'm into sci-fi. Parents being parents, they look around at the other parents like, do you understand this stuff? And every other parent going, we don't understand their stuff, but our kids seem to be in this stuff. It's the North American way. And they knew that would I struggle Monday to Friday to get up to go to school? Absolutely. But come Saturday morning, I wouldn't need nobody to wake me up. I wouldn't need an alarm to wake me up. My internal clock would like, oh, geez, what time is it? And I wake up and I jump out of bed at 6 o'clock in the morning. Now, keep in mind, this man worked Monday to Friday. My mom worked Monday to Friday, 9 to 5 jobs. My dad did other jobs outside of, he had two jobs. My mom came home, took care of me. Well, dad was, okay, this is what it is, right? Both parents working. And the one day they get to sleep in is the Saturday. And let me tell you how good of a man this guy was, okay? Because on Saturday, I know he gone to bed late. My mom gone to bed late, and I bright and early, she tailed, wake up, brush my teeth, run over, click on the TV on the channel 3, click, 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 sit there. I start watching Battle of the Planets. I came across this episode, and I'm like, okay, it's in the future. They got costumes. They're ninjas, and they look like birds that can fly. That checked off every single box in my little imagination back then, because I wanted to have wings, because I wanted a man to fly. I was all about ninja and martial arts at the same time. They had cool looking vehicles. It was scientific, and that's what would happen. Now, why do I say 6 o'clock in the morning? I think it came on at 6:30, so I always made sure to be up a couple of minutes to make sure I didn't miss an episode, and I always wanted to catch the beginning of da-da-da-da-da-da, right, the theme song. And sure enough, this man would drag himself out of bed. He would look and see me in front of TV. Are you good? Dad. My voice was like 17 octaves higher. Not because I was younger, it's probably because I was really excited. And my dad, like, okay. And then he would drive himself, make breakfast, come over, give me breakfast, and I would eat breakfast with my legs crossed on the floor with my little tray and food, sit in front of the TV. And it's usually you get the speech, don't sit too front close to the TV because your eyes would go. He wouldn't say anything because he understood it was Saturday morning cartoons. And Barry, with his little afro and his PJs, would be sitting there eating to his heart's content. And this man would be in his recliner watching, trying to understand what the appeal is, but he wouldn't take away from the experience. And he might close his eyes for a nap, and then he would wake up for Looney Tunes, he would wake up for the Flintstones, and that's the shows that he was into. But he sat there, so he took me to Star Wars. Yes, back in 1977. And then he had to put up with me, well, these are not the droids you're looking for, to me wanting to have a bird costume, to, okay, all right, shout out to my parents for understanding and not understanding at the same time my love for this show. Okay, that's
woo!
Yeah.
Woo! Yeah. Okay.
Ingrained, dude. Ingrained. Deep.
Strong bloodline. Got it. Got it. Okay.
Gotta make sure I don't
I'll say
overheat.
for me,
Overheat.
Don't overheat. Overheat. Like, I will say, like, my parents, same thing. 6 o'clock in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning, I'm up, you know, I remember like that. I remember Battle of the Planets, watching it, and again, it was the action of it was very, because around that time, I don't immediately recall if there was a shit. I'm sure there were. When did Thunder the Barbarian came out? Probably in the same genre kind of scenario.
But yeah, but years later. Yeah.
But years later. But again, that's what I'm saying. So those are like the early ones that, you know, you got your Flintstones that's very comedic and very one scene kind of scenario. You know, just the action wasn't there. But Battle of the Planet, there was movement. There was action. There was like, oh, something. Oh, my God. The plane turns into fire? Oh, that's a fire. Oh, they're going in action. Then you get used to understand like, oh, here we go. Everybody join back together. Shh. Plane. I'm like, wow. So I fully understand. I don't know if I can remember my father sitting down. I'm sure he would. I can't remember if he did. But, you know, as brothers, so maybe they talk among themselves and like saying, I stayed up with Barry. Maybe my father saw the same trajectory and said, you know what? I'll probably do the same thing. But anyway, I'm not even getting to that. All I can say,
he did.
I'm sorry.
Your uncle. Knowing your dad, my uncle. Knowing your dad.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like I'm saying, the two brothers are talking, I'm sure. But I know personally for myself, Battle of the Planets was a deep, ingrained show in my life from that time until now. I have a serious conversation with people. You know that. This show was like one of those like top tiers. Like, you know, what was a favorite, you know, cartoon from back in the day? That's always on the list. That will always make the list. Always make the list.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. So let's go down to the brass tacks of it. So that's why we're talking about this show, because one, this is really what started me on my trajectory of geekdom, nerddom, whatever you want to call it, being a blurred, whatever, right? This is what it started off for me with. Really, I watched others before, but this is the one I turned around and watched religiously without fail. So keep in mind. So now we talk about Battle of the Planets. Well, you heard us mention two names, Battle of the Planets and Gatchaman. So the original show was Gatchaman that came about in 1972 by Tasumoku Productions. So they turned around in Japan, made this cartoon. And the cartoon, the original one, was 105 episodes. And if you look at the whole 106 episodes, of Gatchaman, I'm talking. So if you look at it together, you had Gatchaman, which was 105, 106 episodes. 105, thank you. And then it was Gatchaman 2 that ran for, oh, geez, I can't remember how many episodes Gatchaman 2 ran for, right? It was like maybe 90-something episodes. And then it was Gatchaman F, you know, or 70-something episodes. And then it was Gatchaman F, which was Gatchaman Fighter, which was the conclusion of this whole series. So altogether, it's like 205 episodes of the Gatchaman run, broken up into three parts. So Battle of the Planets was based off of Gatchaman, the first initial run.
Right.
Right. Okay. And they whittled that list down to what, 86 episodes?
Something like that, yeah.
Right. So Battle of the Planets, so what they did is they took Gatchaman, and so you had Gatchaman, Gatchaman 2, Gatchaman Fighter. We never got Battle of the Planets using that real, you know, storyline from Gatchaman 2 and Gatchaman Fighter. They did do it in G-Force Guardians of the Galaxy, and they kind of did that. But we're keeping to the original, not to overwhelm. So Gatchaman is what came out. It was like five characters. Science Ninjas. That's their Science Ninja Team Gatchaman. Gotcha. That's the full thing when it translates. Why? Because they were ninjas. They were trained as ninjas with the fighting style, how they operated, but they had science between. Why is the science? Well, the science is their vehicles. They were physically enhanced for their speed, endurance, abilities by science to be stronger. Picture like almost a bionic man, right? We can rebuild them. They were young teenagers that were put together, trained to stop these terrorist group, which was Spector. Okay. Because they're trying to steal our resources and trying to undermine what happens with man. So that was a Science Ninja Team, Gatchaman. All takes place on Earth. Got it. Sandy Frank now goes to this conference, right? MIP conference, and he turns around to an MIP conference. It's a French name. Merchandise, the Merchandise International, whatever. But it's MIP. And he goes there, and these are where shows would go to say, hey, we have a show here in Japan, and we want to get it out to a national market. So they're shopping it around, right? It's like a whole trade show. So, you know, yep. We've got other properties before, like Speed Racer came across that way because it was shown here at one of these shows, and it got brought over, you know, along with other Japanese cartoons that we got over in North America. Of course, when we get it, they have to be redubbed in English. You have to keep in mind culture differences and anything along those lines. So with Gatchaman, Gatchaman was seen there. It was seen by Sandy Frank. So keep in mind, the time that Sandy Frank got to this, Star Wars just came out. So Sandy Frank went, he got a couple of episodes. He brought it back to his hotel at the time, said, oh, I'll look at it later on. Seems interesting. And then, of course, when he bought the rights to it, he came back to North America in the States. And while he was here, the big explosion happened in 1977, Star Wars. Everything is Star Wars. So then you want something that's similar and not to attract the viewers because they saw how much of a cultural moneymaker Star Wars was at the time.
Right.
Got it. Sandy Frank turned around and says, okay, we're going to have to make some changes. I got this Gatchaman property. This can work. Five acting as one. Got it. It's got all these different elements. It's like Star Wars. Really? How so? Oh, we're going to call it, instead of Gatchaman, we're going to call it Battle of the Planets. And why they have the team? Because they're still Gatchaman, but instead of Gatchaman, they're going to call G-Force. That's the name of the team. This is why they have the G's on their belt buckle kind of thing, you know, bird emblems, so forth. Okay. Now, when you watch it, the show had, at the time for the censors, it was a little bit too violent. What was okay for Japan audiences and young adults is not seeing the same thing. We were more sensitive.
Conservative. Yeah.
Conservative. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Perfect word. Conservative. So we're more conservative. So because of that, they had to take out some of the violent scenes. They had to change some of the narrative. And of course, they had to get the narrative that's called Battle of the Planets. It just can't happen on Earth. They got to go to different planets. So this is why a lot of times when you watch Battle of the Planets, it's like you'll see, oh, it's going to such and such a planet. And when they land there, it's like, this planet looks like Earth, looks like Earth, looks like Earth, because they're always the original fringes from there. So to compensate for that, when they edit the episodes, they realized the episodes were too short. They needed a piece to kind of connect it all together. So they came up with an original character for Battle of the Planets called Seven Zark Seven. Seven Zark Seven was the narrator. So his footage would always come in to extend the episode, explain what was going on. And this person, that voice was always a narrator. So when you would see them, like, you know, flying into space, they would show a scene of the Phoenix, which is their plane. And Gatchaman was called the God Phoenix, would go into space, so to speak, and land on another planet. And then they would use the original footage. That's how it was edited down together. Wow. Now, this has had, you know, multiple cultural things. You can always still find it. I think there's the one anime to always watch. And to show you the impact of it, if you go to your local comic book store, like the ones we mentioned, or one that's close to you, you can look for the Gatchaman book, and you can find the painted covers mostly by Alex Ross. So if you know Alex Ross, you know he's done the covers and the inside for Kingdom Come for DC. He did the covers for Marvel X. You know, that whole run, he did the covers on the outside of that. And he's done a lot of other work within both companies and painted work. He himself is a huge Gatchaman / Battle of the Planets person. He's got his own little, his geek things. He has a room, a museum with all this stuff that he likes over the years. And he's got a full out man, life size costume of the Eagle Leader there. Right, that's Alex Ross. You're the artist. Okay, this is where we're at with this show. So, why is this speaking to me? Well, that's it. You know, when I heard about it, my first, you know, once again, went off Star Wars, Battle of the Planets, and then you see the episodes, and it makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. So let's break down some of the characters, by name, maybe a little bit of their backstory, and we'll go from there. So, but I'm going to go back and forth. So hold on with me. So we got Gatchaman, right? / Battle of the Planets. So under Gatchaman, the characters had one name. When they came to North America, they renamed the characters and, of course, different voice actors to have them in English. So we'll go from that. So as Betcherman, it was Ken the Eagle, who was the leader. So he's G1, because when they're in their human clothes, you'll see each of them have 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. So you got Ken, who is the Eagle leader. You got Joe, who's second in command, the Condor. You got June, the Swan. She's the only female character on the crew. On the show. You got Junpei, the Swallow. So he's the kid on the show. So even though they're teenagers, he's the youngest one. And you got Ryu, the Owl. All different body types. Mm-hmm. All different things. So let's go from the Gatchaman part perspective, right? So Ken is the Eagle. So Ken Washui is the Eagle. He's a pilot. He's a leader of the Science Ninja team, Gatchaman. Now, with his storyline, his mom has passed away. His dad has disappeared. We don't know what happened to his dad. He's an orphan. So he gets picked up by Dr. Naboo, brings him in and says, hey, I'm Dr. Naboo. I've got instructions here to look after you, more train you to help fight this oncoming threat in the future. So he adopts him as a young kid. Right. You know, I'm talking preteen. That's his whole thing. Then you got Joe Asakura. So he's a race car driver. So let me get it straight. So Ken is also a pilot, if I didn't mention that. So then you got Joe, who's a race car driver, Japanese-Italian descent. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you find out later on, and if you read the Alex Ross, like, 12-issue series on this, you find out that, you know, he's got some ties to the Italian mafia. His family has a ties to Italian mafia on one side. But he's a race car driver. He's the hothead, but he's also the marksman. He's the weapons specialist. You know, and that's where Joe falls in. So Joe himself, his parents were killed off by the Black Door. He's an orphan. He gets taken in. He's got a lot of anger issues. So you got Ken, whose main weapon is a boomerang, sonic boomerang. You got Joe, who has a special gun, a sonic gun. It has multiple purposes.
Yep.
Very hot-headed, a lot of anger. He's just like, destroy everybody. Let's save them all, you know? That's how he goes about it. Then you got June, who was a slash Japanese American, you know, heritage. She was raised in the orphanage. You never really find out her last name. But in her time, she likes a couple of things. So she likes motorcycle riding. She's a professional, like, motorcycle rider. She's an avid motorcycle enthusiast. And then she has a snack bar. It's a little cafe. She owns a cafe. Let's just put it in that.
Right.
Thing, and that's where she does her things. And then you got the Swallow. So he's the youngest one. He also grew up as an orphan, you know, never knew what his last name was. And he lives with June. So June looks at him as a younger brother. He sees June as his older sister. They refer to each other as brother and sister, even though they're not biological that way. But that's where he's got that connection, and they look after each other. So she, you know, outside their secret identities, June, the Swallow, lives with Junpei lives with June, right?
Yeah.
And his car he likes to drive is a dune buggy. He's got a little dune buggy, and he works there at that snack bar also. And then you got Ryu the Owl. So Ryu is the most unique out of all of them, meaning he's more of a bigger person. His fighting style, even though he's a ninja, he's got like some sumo kind of wrestling style. But he was born as a fisherman's son. And he was the manager of a yacht club in the harbor. That's his main, you know, what he does outside of the Science Ninja team. He's also the main pilot of the God Phoenix. So their main ship, he's the main pilot on that one. So don't be fooled. His piloting skills are on par there with Ken. So picture Ken flies the fighter plane and Ryu flies the carrier.
Right?
Like, you know, those C-130 Air Force carriers, that's what he's going to fly. He's really good at what he does. But what I mean by he's unique, he's the only one who's not an orphan. His parents are still alive. He has a younger brother. They're all part of this, and they all work within that fishing village. He's the son of a fisherman. He knows his parents is not anything strange. So I'm not sure how he got into that role to join the team, because a team, you know, 4 out of 5 are definitely orphans. But it does explain the mentality of why certain things happen with him. So that's where it comes into. So, you know, and let's break it down. So as I said, Ken, the Eagle leader, has a sonic boomerang. Joe's got a gun. June right. has what you call a sonic yo-yo. So it's like a yo-yo thing, but she could, like a discus, like she could throw it with a string on it. It's got, it can stick into the wall. It's got a point on it. It can explode, right? Junpei actually has bolos. So, you know, he throws them, they wrap around your legs, and they got different functions. And Ryu also has a gun. You don't see him use it too often because he really gets more into hand-to-hand combat when he's on a mission. So that is the team of Gatchaman right there as a nutshell. Now, when you watch the episodes, you always hear Ryu saying, hey, you guys are always want me to fly you close. So keep in mind, in Ryu's plan, when he's got the Phoenix will fly, and it's got like certain open parts on it. So when he goes to pick up the team, he'll go down and he'll pick up June. June will show up on a motorcycle. It goes in, let's say, you know, one side in a pod on the wings, like on the left wing, and I can get these black words, so bear with me. And then on the right wing, he picks up Junpei in his dune buggy, which converts into like this all-terrain battle vehicle. And then, you know, he'll go and match up with Joe, and his car turns into this like high-end Formula One race car that goes into the nose of the plane, and then he goes up in the atmosphere, and then he connects with Ben, the Eagle Leader, and his plane flies into the back of the God Phoenix, and then it all connects, boom, they're good to go. And that's how, then they all meet in the cockpit, they all have their respective roles within the Phoenix, and they go away, and they go off to do their missions. Okay, now a lot of times when they go, they have to leave the God Phoenix, and I'm not overshadowing anything, at the time it's like, okay, look, the God Phoenix can fly, can go underwater like a submarine. It can fly in the regular atmosphere. And at times, in moments of distress or danger, if they have to go fly through an object or get out of something, they can hit like this ultra paper mode. And this plane starts going so fast, it starts developing fire around it, looking like a fiery flame bird, henceforth the Phoenix name. And it causes it to fly through objects, monsters, and giant robots they fight to, you know, but it can only do it for a little while, and it causes them to pass out because of the intense G-force.
Nice.
Segway. So this is where it is. So a lot of times when they have to leave the Phoenix to kind of go on to a mission, they'll say, okay, you know, Ken will say, okay, it's me and Dune. We got to go on here and do this. You know, Joe and Junpei, you guys go that way. And then Ryu's like, hey, guys, what about me? No, you got to stay here with the Phoenix. We need you. We'll radio. And he's always saying, well, how come you guys never call me? I want to be on part of these missions. I don't want to always be left behind. And in the end of the episodes, it turns out, well, the reason in Gatchaman they say you get left behind is because out of all of us, you're the only one with family, Ryu. If we end up passing away, no one is going to mourn for us. We're not going to hurt anybody. We're not going to leave anyone behind that's going to be sad. There's no one that's going to mourn for us except for Dr. Naboo slash also Dr. Anderson. If you watch Battle of the Planets, same person. So Dr. Naboo, that's it. But we don't leave any family members behind. You have a younger brother. You have a mom and dad. So it's our way of kind of protecting him. They only bring him in when it's absolutely necessary. This is why they always leave him behind. So it's not that he's weak. It's not that he can't hold his own. It's not that he's not a good fighter. It's really Ken's way of saying, yeah, dude, you have a family. We don't want to kind of go back to your family saying, hey, we all made it back from the mission, but your son didn't. So that's how they look after each other. So it's almost like they have their own family dynamics in it. Now, within Ken and Joe the Condor, you know, Ken sometimes can push a button, but Joe is a hothead. Those two fight more amongst themselves than anybody else.
It's like sibling rivalry between them, and they're not brothers. That's what's always hilarious.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, Ken is a little bit more level-headed. Joe pushes him, and one time Joe will push him. Joe will make him like, man, you pissed me off. That he brings him down to a level that the two of them start having a fisticuffs amongst each other. Joe's whole mentality about things is, shoot first. I'm not asking no questions later. Let's move on. And Ken would be like, hold on. Let's think about the situation. And Joe was Mr. No. The Galactor or Specter, they killed off my parents. I'm just shooting everybody. I'm not asking no questions. There's the enemy. Let's fight. So here's the thing with the episodes is, with Gatchaman, yes, you see people die. Be it the enemies. And I mean, there's no, a machine blows up and then 5 minutes later you see or 30 seconds later you see a parachute coming out. No, it's not like G.I. Joe. When things blow up, you understand. They're humans, humanoids, there are the humans inside of that giant robot machine controlling it, or in this enemy base, and they're blowing it up. Okay, there's no like, oh, we made it to the escape pods. No, no. Sometimes even the leader of that base ends up dying, and you don't see him again or her ever.
They're gone.
Yeah, exactly. So to get rid of some of that violence, that's why they had to turn around and re-edit the episodes for censorship, because we're more conservative over here, and that's fine. And that henceforth, that's where Battle of the Planets comes in. So that's in a nutshell. What do you got to think about that, Rod?
Listen, these characters are very, like you said, the great thing about it, that you can see the different dynamics of all the characters. So you're pointing out the two of them. Actually, you say like three. So you were saying Ken, Joe, and even for Ryu. But Ryu is more of the compassionate one. You know, you could say Mark or Ken. Let me go from the Gotchusen. So Ken is very level-headed. Joe is just want to push buttons. Shoot first, ask questions later. Or don't even ask questions. Shoot first. All right, on next one. Why you do that? Let's go. But then look at Swan. June, she is the like the peacemaker. She's the one who's just basically trying to like keeping the cool, keep them together type of scenario. And like you said, Jinpu, I mean, I'm going to say his name properly again. Let me say that. Jinpei. He's the kid of the whole thing. So he has that bubbly type of atmosphere, attitude, and just like he's getting himself in trouble. You know, he's just like the little brother who's always around when you're like saying, okay, give me a couple seconds. Yeah. It's always hilarious. So you can see the different dynamics of that. And it's great because you don't normally see that in cartoons back then. So it was another way of pulling the audience in, realizing, just to let you know, this could possibly happen. These guys could be real. Again, entry, early multiverse. This could be happening somewhere, someplace right now. It seems so real, because it is in another universe. That's what it is. So I mean, I've always liked the show. Like I said, it was one of those type of shows that's ingrained and just made you feel like, yeah, there's a lot of story. It makes sense. As I said, coming over to the North American audience, they had to downplay it, switch it up, be more conservative. But when you now older now, you can go back and watch. You can like, it wasn't that far of a difference, but I can understand. A young 7-year-old eating their corn pops, eating their corn flakes early in the morning, and just sitting like, wow. Yeah, yeah. There's things to be said.
Of course, absolutely, there's things to be said. So that's when it came out. And I mean, this ran for, as I said, many years. Mm-hmm. And many properties. So, you know, we've never had a really big, there's been video games made on it. There's been toy figures-ish made on it. There's been licensing made on it. And that's what it is. So I liked, as I said, Gatchaman, that's the origin of these characters. Now, if you watch the original Gatchaman run, as I said, 200 some odd plus episodes, I know some episodes might seem like filler. Some episodes, okay, it's just got the action in there. It's where they start building it up. And, you know, you get the episode 49-50 is where it starts ticking in, right? Where the storyline really starts getting deep. And it's a full night. Nice, if you watch Gatchaman, Gatchaman 2, Gatchaman F, even though the ending is a little bit bittersweet, it's a whole, like, you got a full rounded series. You get a full story arc with all the characters. So with Gatchaman, here's some key points that you don't, you know, some I'll go through here. Here's the difference. So in Gatchaman, you got Ken the leader, right? In episode 50, he's always talking about he's an orphan. But then you see this other person show up, you know, from, they call it, you know, he leads the Red Impulse, which is another fighter pilot team. So the leader name from Red Impulse, his name is Kronos, always disguised, and he shows up. And there's times where he has to kind of push Ken to be a better pilot, to be a better leader, to go through certain things. And then at one point he drops little hints here and there. And then Ken's like, goes back to Dr. Naboo and is like, is that leader my dad? And a lot of times it was kind of, no, I don't know what you're talking about. No, he's part of another, you know, part of the Earth organization. So just how G-Force is one division, Red Impulse is another division. You know, we have different divisions within the spy organization, just like S.H.I.E.L.D. S.H.I.E.L.D. has, you know, its super soldiers, it's got its traditional agents, it's got anyway, so it breaks down all that thing. So he's got different things going on. But as you find out, as the series goes on, you find out that Kronos, the Red Impulse pilot leader, is in fact the father of Ken. He left Ken behind with the mom because he went undercover trying to infiltrate Spectre, that you know, the Galactor, sorry, the Galactor and Gatchaman in there. And you always feared that if his identity got out, they would take revenge by killing off his wife and his son. So he really had to watch from a distance and change his persona to carry on this battle. And that storyline goes on where there was a lot of, is he, isn't he, not sure. And it almost brought me back to how it was with Cyclops and Corsair of the Starjammers. You know, is that my father, not my father? And he kind of plays a very parallel to a lot of points. And by the time, the only difference is by the time he finally confronts him and says, hey, yes, Ken, I am your father. And he finds out for sure, he has to sacrifice himself. Kronos, I mean, has to sacrifice himself to save this city, save his son, and the rest of, you know, the neighboring area by destroying this missile. That's it. He's gone. You don't see him again. So Ken finally gets closure of, you're my dad. Certain things make sense. You see the similarities between the two of them. And then he passes away. Right? No coming back. That's story writing right there. Then, you know, as the series progresses, so that's something we don't get. Like in Battle of the Planets, they still go through that, but they don't kill him off. They make it to pretend like he's dead, but then he comes back. It's almost like a Marvel comic or DC. Nobody dies for good unless you're Barry Allen, and even then, it just took longer to bring him back. Okay.
Yeah.
So now with Joe the Condor in Gatchaman, his story like arc fully different. He goes, being a hothead, he gets into a mission where he gets a piece of shrapnel that's stuck in him. Same thing happens with Battle of the Planets. But in Battle of the Planets, where this shrapnel, almost like Tony Stark, it's moving towards its heart, can kill him. They put him in a centrifuge thing, just like Iron Man. They get it out, you know, or no, it's not his heart. I think it's in his brain, sorry. And they were able to remove it finally, or it falls out on its own. He gets saved. And that's how they change it in Battle of the Planets. So he never goes through that story arc. In Gatchaman, it does become fatal. He goes and he's supposed to be, they took away his transmuter. So they all have these watches that turn him from street clothes and street vehicles into their G-Force outfits, right? When playing with molecules. It's the ultimate trans, you know, changing thing. Transmute! I know in Gatchaman, they say bird go. I think transmute is way better. Right? Yeah. So they get the watch, they put it over their face, molecules turn around, and it changes a propeller plane into a jet fighter. It changes a race car. Like a Formula One race car. You know, June's motorcycle turns into a futuristic motorcycle that has skis at the bottom that can actually put her over water if she needs to be. Junpei goes from, you know, a dune buggy into this all-terrain pack vehicle that can fly. It's got rockets on it, different gadgets like a saw, a drill that's inside of it. You know, the only one that doesn't have that is Ryu the Condor. So Ryu the Owl, because the Phoenix never transforms. It's just in a state where it has no vehicles in it, or it has the vehicles in it and it takes everything on board. Yeah. So with Joe the Condor, his story arc is he gets that shrapnel. It proves pretty much fatal. He's supposed to stay. So they take him off the team and he's not supposed to transmute or do any field work because he's slowly dying. He, of course, Joe being Joe, disobeys orders. G-Force, you know, or sorry, Gatchaman. Gatchaman is not just a person. The Gatchaman is the whole team name. So Gatchaman is in a mission. They get, like, you know, almost captured. Joe goes there, shows up in plain clothes, and it's very reminiscent of, you know, rest in peace, you know, Jason David Frank, of Tommy the Green Power Ranger. If you watch that first arc where Tommy, the Green Power Ranger, loses his powers, he has to fight Goldar, without the Power Ranger coin because his powers are gone. And he's fighting him. And one of the best episodes, in my opinion, in that series, if you like the Tommy arc, Joe does the same thing. He goes in there without the Gatchaman costume. He's in street clothes. He still has access to his abilities and weapons. And he goes like kamikaze on who he's got to fight. Taking out all, you know, endless amount of troops, gets in there, last mission, he sacrifices himself, the team thinks he's dead, but he gets picked up by a defector scientist who wants revenge against the Galactor, gives him a cyborg body, so they, you know, give him a cyborg heart. Joe, and this is now Joe's storyline, that's how it ends in Gatchaman, but in Gatchaman 2, you realize now they've come up with another person to replace Joe. You find out later on that this person who's replacing Joe on the team kind of butts heads. You find out that he's a spy for the Galactor. And he gets taken out by this mysterious figure, which they think is Joe the Condor, but Joe the Condor is not around. And then he finally shows up and you find out that Joe doesn't feel like he's back fully with the team because he's made certain decisions. And he himself has like almost like a ticking time bomb inside of him, but he's a cyborg. So he's always outside of the team.
Yep.
At this point, they got a different machine. They got the new God Phoenix, which looks more like a bird instead of the traditional one they had, that blue and white, blue and red plane they had. So they all got different vehicles. It's bigger. It looks more like truly like an eagle. That was more for the Gatchaman, the original Phoenix, and not the new God Phoenix 2 they updated to. That's my personal aesthetic for it. But that's where the storyline comes in. And I'm like, wow. And then you get into Gatchaman F, which kind of redeems all that story. So in Battle of the Planets, yes, he stole Joe, right? So it's Joe the Condor or Joe. So Joe, he stole Joe. Is it? Do I have it right? He's Jason. In Battle of the Planets, his name is Jason. Sorry, my apologies. So Jason the Condor in Battle of the Planets does go through a similar story arc, but he doesn't die. So he never gets the cyborg body at the end of the series. He doesn't die at the end of the series. He just gets injured, but he survives. Everything is good, you know, and it's a happy wrap up there with all of that. So his storyline is different. You can tell he's still hot-tempered. He doesn't talk too much about his family being in the mafia and so forth like that. That's where the difference is. So in Battle of the Planets, we don't have Ken, we have Mark. We don't have Joe, we've got Jason, right? Instead of June the Swan, it's Princess, right? Instead of Junpei the Swallow, it's Chaos. And instead of Ryu the Owl, his name's Tiny. Now, Tiny still has his family. Junpei, or Hiop, he doesn't even talk. He just makes noises. You know, and they all understand him. Don't know what he's speaking. He went from having full conversations with a little bit of a stutter to like, this boy don't even speak. All right. And, you know, Princess, you don't get really too much into her origin. You find out that she's come from a village and so forth. So these are the characters. Now, what I like is when someone who's passionate about this project, like Alex Ross, for example, and he did his 12-run issue that he's kind of was a head poncho behind this whole thing. And there were some spinoffs. You find out a little bit more about them, open up some more mysteries. So once again, in a comic book with Alex Ross, you know, Gatchaman, you know, okay, you got Mark. All right, stole his dad, is part of the leader of the Red Impulse pilots, secret agents. You find that Ken, who is the Condor, he runs into his uncle, and his uncle asks him to kind of take on this mission outside of G-Force, where he has to kind of get back to his, you know, mafia roots to a certain degree, because his uncle is in the family business and wants him to take out this guy as a sniper because Ken is, you know, he's the marksman. And that goes into a whole lot of things about him and his family and where he sees them and how he looks at his family at the time. And he had to make a hard decision. And it was well written. I like it stayed within, I think, the confines of what Gatchaman / Battle of the Planets is. You know, Princess, you find out that she finds her roots from, I think, a grandfather or something like that, from this one village where they had like monks. And it almost got wiped out. So she almost connected with her roots. You know, Ryu, or Tiny, same thing, status quo, family. But what I liked was Keop, it was Junpei the Swallow. So Keop, the youngest on the team, his storyline started expanding a little bit. Because in the books, you realize there's always this guy in the background. Small little guy, he's missing one arm. And, you know, he seems to be the janitor on site. You'd see Anderson smiling, he's older. He had a little bit of, you know, the traditional mustache, how they draw it in Japanese cartoons, right? The space in the middle, the little mustache. Very short guy, always had a smile on his face. But when you look at him at times, he's like, and even the other members are past him, they almost like pass him and wouldn't pay attention to him, right? They're to be nice to him, but they're focused on their thing when they're back at their home base. And they walk past him, and when they draw it, if you look as a reader, you're like, he looks like an older version of Keop. But he's missing one arm. At one point, the base gets attacked, and they all go into action, and then you see the janitor walk around, and he's like, uh-oh, and he drops his mop, and this guy jumps about 20 feet up in the air, kicks off covering from the ceiling that has a vent on it, and disappears into the shadows. Like, pure ninja skills. And how they alluded to it was, this person could have been the father of Keop. Did they clone Keop from him? We never got the full answer on that story arc. Or maybe we did and I missed it. And if I did, someone put it down in the comments below. But now I want to know, why is this janitor, one, looks like him? How is he missing an arm? You're working at a secret base. And is that your son? Mm-hmm. Is that a clone of you? Younger? We never got the full answer on that. But it was opening that can of worms right there. Now I was down for this trip. Oh, so much. So good. I'm still surprised. My head hasn't blown up yet, Rod.
No, it's all right. You're doing good.
I'm getting through this. So we've had, like, you know, the Gatchaman OVA. So the director, three episode movie where they reimagined their costumes, which I liked. I was all about that. Reimagined the Phoenix, which looked really cool. I was all for that. I wanted more from it. Here's the tidbits from that was, and then they came up with another cartoon just recently called Infinity Force. So Infinity Force, and they came up with two of them. So you had a movie, you had one which was a DVD, a Blu-ray release, 12 episodes, and then they did a follow-up with it. So the original one had everything from that studio that came around, right? Pasuko Productions, who was behind, you know, G-Force, or sorry, Gatchaman, Pac-Man Blade, Kasan Robot Fighter, and the Space Knight. There's one other one there. And they put all those properties in there. So you had Ken, the leader, coming from dimension. So it took all these heroes from different dimensions, put them in a new dimension, and they had to form their, you know, Infinity Force to fight and figure it out. So in there, you find out that the rest of Gatchaman was killed off,
right?
Destroyed. You know, Ken, the leader, was the only surviving member. He was out for revenge against the Galactor on this, because it was a last ditch effort. The rest of G-Force got destroyed. He's a surviving member. He gets pulled in a different dimension. He fights in that dimension, organizes them there, gets back to his home dimension just in time to, I guess, almost like a time warp kind of thing to stop the original Gatchaman from dying. Then they did a follow-up series where you see, oh, hold up, you know, Joe the Condor survives also. So now you got Ben and Joe from Gatchaman, because he shows up in a different dimension. So that's it. Ben goes back to a different dimension, runs into Joe, sees the rest of G-Force. Once again, they get killed off. And then you find out Dr. Anderson is the Battle of the Planets. Dr. Naboo is possessed by this entity, and he's now turned on Gatchaman. And this is why they end up dying. And now you got Joe and Ken in there. And that's the last kind of thing you get with their storyline, is through Infinity Force, Infinity Force 2. You can find that DVD at Amazon. You probably could find it online somewhere too, and see those episodes. So I, being the fan, went out and bought those, because, yeah, all in, son. All in.
Nice.
Yeah. The only thing I'm missing, and then the last tidbit here, and I'll say this, Rod, is we did get a live-action movie that was done over in Japan.
Yes.
Right? The costumes were a little bit different. They gave him more capes instead of, like, wings. I was happy they made the costumes. but I thought it could have been a little bit better or truer to the properties. You know, you only see the Phoenix at the very, very last episode. It made me feel of the original Fantastic Four movie that never saw publication. You could find them online. Bootleg copies exist out there. That's how everyone sees it. Where it was the original Fantastic Four, you know, live action one they did back in the 60s or late 60s, early 70s kind of thing. And they used all their money as special effects on the Human Torch finally going flame on at the end, and he's flying and he outflies his laser to destroy it. They use the Phoenix at the very, 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 very end of this. I like the actors they picked, right? They're all Asian actors. I thought the sequences are good, but at times it missed what I was hoping to get a more traditional translation of this going from an anime into live action. Now, two other fans of this IP are the Russo brothers, who is behind Avengers.
Yep.
And they keep saying they want to bring a live action adaptation to this IP. Okay. Wow. 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 Hopefully it's more closer to it. Hopefully Alex Ross has something to do with it. These are just me speculating. All right, Rod, I've done a lot of talking. Okay.
Oh.
And I haven't sweat through my shirt.
Hey. Well, doing good. Liking that. All right. So, listen. Are you going to break it down? You want to break this down now?
I didn't even try fan casting this yet.
Oh, you didn't?
I didn't. I think we're going to have to do a part two because I'm going to have to dig a little more deeper on this. And I have no problem doing a part two on this. Let's just call this part one.
Okay.
Hold your guys. We're going to come back to part two and we're going to break it down in that one. That'll be episode 151. This has got to be a two-parter, man. It's
easily.
Easily. Okay. We got to talk. Yeah. We will do a two-parter on this one. Let's just put it that way out there. So, yes, I know I'm not trying to prolong. It was just so much for me to get through that. I got to.
Good.
When it's nice, you got to go back. When it's nice, you got to go back twice. All right.
Nice.
But what's your thoughts, or how would you like to see it? You don't have to cast it. We will get into that after.
Well, I want to see it live action because, like you said, the live adaptation that we got was nice. It was one of those, you know, the only live adaptation we got, and you take what you get. So you're right. Yeah. There's certain thing that was slightly different. You know, it had a darker feel, which was okay to me on that sense, because with the times, we're going to have to give it, you know, just make it a little bit more realistic. We're going to have to put the situation is going to have to be more dire. You know, that, like, why do we have this team come together? Like, no one else can, you know, the government can't handle it. The country can't handle it. We need a specific special ops team for a specific reason. It's one of those ones like, there's no one else. We got to call these guys in type of scenario. So that means the situation got to be kind of dark. It has to be like, make you really inhale, exhale kind of scenario. So I'm okay with that. So I personally would like to see a live one with the similar type of feel to it. Because not if you're saying like, you know, if the Russo brothers, you know, putting their bid into it, they're going to try to do something to it. It's going to be nice. I have a feeling, I have faith in them that it's going to come out with good storytelling on it. And honestly, I didn't even think on the aspect that they probably not holding out or whatever the scenario is for Alex Ross. So if Alex Ross is going to be, if he's part of this whole scenario,
hope so.
If that's the reason why it's been holding off for so long, not so long, but they announced it and we didn't even hear anything like that. You know, you're getting your ducks aligned, getting everything in order. I fully understand. I hope that's the reason why they put we got to pause on it. Let them get themselves all sorted out. I'll wait. I'm okay with that. Yeah. Give me a live action. Give it to me like that. I'm good like that.
Yeah, my only thing that scared me at one point, they said that, well, it might be, you know, they want to do Gotcha Man, but it might be different from what you remember it. And I'm like, nope, I don't like that. So, you know, and I'm hoping Alex Ross has something to do with it because he's a big enough influence in the industry to have a voice to stand for how it should be because he is so, you know, vested into this property.
100%.
Right? 100%. Yeah, that's my only thing. Like, I need to see it. And then it's, you know, we'll get into the casting in another episode, but I said, everyone knows this is the anime. Like, this is where you see a storytelling coming across, psychology behind it, writing, everything like that. It's one of those series that is so good that I think sometimes people sleep on it, right?
Mm.
So, Gatchaman crowds. There's nothing to do with Gatchaman. Let's get away from that, right? And, you know, the only two I'm going to stay with is Gatchaman and Battle of the Planets. You watch either one of those, you're good. Battle of the Planets. And it did have some memorable voice work. I mean, you know, it had Casey Kasem that was on there playing Mark the Leader. Mm-hmm. You got to understand, without Casey Kasem, Ryan Sequest wouldn't have a job. American Bandstand. He was the voice of American Bandstand. You think Casey Kasem, you think Dick Clark, right? And Casey Kasem did American Bandstand. He had the radio station. He did voice work. He was also the voice of Shaggy from Scooby-Doo, the original cartoon. Okay. Yep. Casey Kasem, you know, and the voice actors on there were amazing for what they did. They really set the tone from talking for Battle of the Planets. The Gatchaman one, the theme song from Gatchaman, or when the action sequences are about to happen for Battle of the Planets. Oh, hey, we got you hyped up. So I think they got to respect and keep as much as possible with that original to get that feel. Don't change it too much. I would like to see those elements. And I think if people had to turn around and say, hey, man, what's a good anime to watch? Watch Gatchaman in its entirety, right? That's Gatchaman, Gatchaman 2, Gatchaman Fighter. Watch that whole thing beginning to end and go, oh. And keep in mind the time period that this was done. This was done early, you know, 70s, right? Yep. And then to add more to it. So like 1972, there we go. October 1st, 1972. So my logic is this. You go through Gatchaman, whole series in its entirety. All right, cool. Then go back and watch Battle of the Planets in its entirety. Then take a pause, go to your comic book store, and find the Alex Ross run of Gatchaman. Got all those 12 issues with the spinoffs. You know, there's a spinoff with Princess. There's a spinoff with Mark. There's a spinoff with Jason. Get those spinoffs, those one shots. Read those, and then put it all together in your head. And then you can go as far as say, hey, go Infinity Force. Check that out. And then go, oh, wow. And then ask the question of why we never got, you know, a video game. Like, there's been video games, and back in the day, I think on a Commodore or whatever, you know, that never really made over to North American shores. Mm-hmm. But picture a video game now with that IP, with the history and the lore.
Yeah.
Give me a video game. Movies are great. I'll watch a movie. I'll watch a new cartoon of it. But give me a video game. That's why I think I was missing. I got the toy figures. I've got the posters. I got the shirts. I got the memorabilia. I wanted give me a decent Xbox PS5 game, you know, and not like just a fight game. You know, they've shown up, yes, in, you know, Tatsumoto Studios versus a Capcom, right? And those characters have made their appearances in a scrolling side by, you know, 2D side scrolling, you know, Street Fighter scenario game. But I want a true 3D immersive.
I'm about to say, you get that background. Give me that first person type of view, the first person type of, and make it even that online. You'll have your individual, so you can play it individual, but you have the ability that when you go online, then you can choose characters and basically have, like, say, a five team, and you basically, everybody is one of the characters. That would be a great option.
I'd lose it. So yeah, here we go. And I didn't yell it, scream in anyone's ear, so I'm happy that I didn't do that for once. Well, I know I've done a lot of talking, but yeah, that's what it is.
Good.
You know, but that's what it is. Gatchaman, for example, is they're fighting a lot of environmental terrorists and trying to keep the world safe from this organization, pretty much like G.I. Joe versus Cobra. What? Before that happened? Yep. Battle of the Planets. Pretty much same thing. They put on the galactic scale because of the influence of Star Wars. Good or bad, Star Wars has opened our eyes to what we have in this day and age in 2024 today, right? I'm not saying it's responsible for it, but for North American shores, it made people go, oh, where the Japanese cartoons were ahead of the game, and then we're kind of catching up. Now we're like, Oh, and that's why we have stuff like Invasion USA. And if you don't know that series, look it up. You can find it online, right? Another great, series. And that was on North American shores that was made by, right? Because I was behind with Steven Spielberg was behind that cartoon. And that's one that gets slept on. Invasion USA. We got to talk about that. Yeah, there we go. Okay. What's your points, Rod? I know we've talked a lot, but
listen. The points I'm going to definitely say is this is an IP that has a lot of good lore. A lot of people gravitate to their early rendition of team anime groups would have been off of Battle of the Planet Gatchaman. You go to any Comic Con or any type of environment, and you can clearly visualize someone wearing a Gatchaman shirt, Mark, Ken, some type of memorabilia. For sure, you'll see it. Yell out, and you'll see all the heads turn. There'll be heads turning. Gatchaman. Who said? Where Gatchaman? So it's embedded. It's in the environment. It's in the lore. That's exactly it. People know this IP. So all I'm going to say is get a chance. If you're not familiar, it's okay. This is definitely from our generation, but this is still an IP that has kept with the times. And it was, last of the times I'm trying to say. So go and get any information you can. Find any type of videos, comics, anything on that, and you'll be quite amazed and quite pleased with that information that you're finding on about Gatchaman, about Battle of the Planets, for sure. We're doing part one.
Five acting as one. Okay, that's like the Three Musketeers thing going on. Five acting as one. Okay, so there we go. There we go. I know I can talk about Gatchaman for all my thing. We're going to continue this episode and do another episode. We're going to break down. We're going to fan cast it our way and talk more. I know there's still more characters to talk about. I know there's Zoltar. There's the Luminous One. Okay. I get it. I know. X amount of time. All right. There we go. So Rod, any last words before we wrap this episode up?
No, let's make sure you hit that follow button. Hit that subscribe. Tell a friend. Iconist Podcast. Let's go.
Thank you. Don't let the show be a secret. On that note, remember, this whole world was started by a pencil, a piece of paper, and lots of imagination. Keep on dreaming. All right. Transmute! Raven! Fairy! Oh!
Raven! Nice! I don't know mine. I'll figure mine out later.